Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John Murphy, Steve Tasker, ready for hour two of the show. One Bills Live coming to you from our Seneca studio at One Bills Drive. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And joining us on the line right now, our regular guest, Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, here to talk about the Bills, the NFL, and fantasy football. He is an ESPN NFL insider, host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show, host of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field Yates on the line. Hello, Field. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today? Good to talk with you.
Yeah, good. Doing great. Take it away, Steve.
Good. We're just going to ask you first some opening impressions about the Buffalo Bills so far, 2-0. I know that they've played the Jets, who, well, maybe the Jets weren't on fire when they, you know, a dumpster fire when they played on opening day. Certainly they've fallen off the cliff in the first 2 weeks. And then they played the Giants, who were switched quarterbacks. So what are your impressions about the Bills and their first two wins?
Well, I think you guys know, maybe some of those listening to the show know, that I was optimistic about the Bills this offseason. Felt like this was a team that was trending in the right direction, that the process was clearly in place, like some of the moves made in free agency. But I would say that a sign of a good team or a team on the rise is one who takes care of business against teams that I believe they should beat. And I know that the Bills don't ever go into a game saying publicly, we should beat this team. None of the guarantees. It's a very different type of comment you would hear from someone like Sean McDermott. Very measured, very respectful week to week, and the players are, I think, following that lead. That being said, those of us on the outside, or someone like myself, believes that they are more talented than both the Jets and the Giants. And they went there on the road in back-to-back weeks and won games that I believe they should have won, which is an excellent sign of a team, because where I think the NFL becomes a not-for-long business quickly is when teams don't take care of business in games you expect them to. And we see that every single week in the NFL. We're going to see it again in week three. It's just a byproduct of how the game works. But I've been really encouraged by what I've seen from the Bills through the first 2 weeks, going on the road, back-to-back games. It feels like they should be the ones that can call MetLife Stadium home now, given the fact that they are 2-0.
Right. Field, do you believe the Bills are more talented than this week's opponents, the Cincinnati Bengals?
I do as well, and this is why I think they have an excellent opportunity to progress to 3-0. And again, I'm not trying to make this a simple thing, the Bills just show up and win, but I think this is a team that certainly is trending in the right direction in the Bills. Playing the first game at home, you know that Western New York is very ready for a home game at, you know, one of the most, you know, I think one of the most enjoyable in-stadium experiences at New Era Field that we have in the NFL. The Bengals are a team that was pesky in week one. They certainly gave Seattle all they could handle on the road. Another place that's not easy to win is Seattle. But Cincinnati has had some major defensive struggles so far. They have been generous to opposing passing games, and the ground game has really not gotten going for Cincinnati. Through two games, the Bengals have 60 rushing yards. Now, they got plenty of passing yards, but the ground game has not been a strength, not been a hallmark, not been a calling card for Cincinnati the first 2 weeks of this season.
Well, the Bills certainly struggled to get going last year. What do you think the biggest difference is for the Buffalo Bills compared to a team that they were last year? They had a top five defense a year ago, but their offense was certainly sputtering, and they did nothing but work on that this offseason. It seems to have paid some dividends already.
Yeah, I'd say so. And certainly this is a team that has way more balance this year. And I think that starts with the improved play of Josh Allen, who, despite the fact that he's still such an unbelievable threat with his legs, as we've seen throughout the season so far, 10 carries this past week, and that awesome design by Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, on the quarterback keep to score, I believe it was the second or third touchdown of the day for the Bills in week two against the Giants. But much improved as a passer. The weapons certainly are much better. Cole Beasley's made an impact. John Brown was awesome in week one. And we haven't even seen some of the guys are going to count on, like Tyler Kroft, who I know John mentioned just a minute ago, making progress in terms of his return from that offseason injury. So very much excited out of what we will see from this Bills offense, with hopefully Devin Singletary being good to go on Sunday. We'll obviously see on that after leaving week two with that hamstring issue.
Hey, Field, we know Josh Allen is not perfect, has not been perfect through two games, but from your perspective, what do we need to see from him next? What is maybe the missing link in Josh Allen's game right now?
little bit more accuracy. And, you know, coaches will tell you that numbers don't matter. And that's correct. In a lot of ways, they don't matter. There are some statistics that are slightly more pertinent than others, though. And I think that the improved accuracy for Josh Allen will be reflected as he continues to get, you know, just mature in this league, right? I mean, this is just what his, this will be his 16th start or 17th start, 15th start coming up. So as a player that has minimal experience relative to where he's going to be soon enough in his career trajectory, I think the consistency and the accuracy are the two things that are going to improve for Josh. But, you know, again, when we're talking about a player who's, what, 23 years old, right? I mean, we're not talking about somebody that's anywhere close to being a finished product. That's just how the NFL world works. Patrick Mahomes at 24 is very much the rare exception as opposed to the rule in young quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think a bit more consistent accuracy from Josh Allen is going to be key. And then, you know, I think one thing that Josh, and this is not anything specific to him, it's just being a quarterback that is mobile enough to be, you know, a threat as a runner. The real challenge is not letting your instincts in the pocket go and just becoming a runner because you can. Standing tall in the pocket, playing well under pressure, things that I've seen from Josh Allen and things that I want to see from him continuing going forward.
Well, they're going to get on the home field for the first time this season against the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals, as you said, they're struggling to run the football, and but they're throwing it pretty well. They found John Ross. They've got Tyler Boyd in their arsenal. What's Josh Allen and the what are Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills going to be able or have to do to beat a team that's structured like Cincinnati is right now?
Yeah, I think on defense, the Bills' primary focus should be sudden change plays or explosive passing plays. Now, John Ross's big touchdown last week came at the end of the game. It was, I think, 41-10 at that point. So very much out of reach against the 49ers. But I would say this, in the week one game where they gave Seattle all they could handle, the explosive plays of John Ross were as potent as any player in week one. When I say he has world-class speed, I'm not exaggerating. Fastest player ever at the NFL Combine at 4.22. They're going to find ways to take vertical shots down the field. And then last week, the 66-yard touchdown, for those watching, we'll see it right now, was really, it's a slant and explosive plays beyond that. John Ross, just so fast, and just such a explosive player that for the Bills, it's first keeping it in front of him, and then second of all, tackle him because he's a slippery guy. He may not be very big, but he is slippery, that much is for sure.
With Field Yates from ESPN, he is the host. He is the host of their fantasy show, ESPN NFL Insider. You can imagine, Field, Buffalonians, Bills fans have a soft spot in their hearts for Andy Dalton for obvious reasons, and he's been back here. Steve and I met him this offseason. He was here. He's a great guy. But I always thought he was like the Timberline of NFL quarterbacks. If you're better than Andy Dalton, you're pretty good. If you're not quite as good as Andy Dalton, you're not very good, right? Well, what do you make of him in his career so far?
Yeah, so I'd say it's been steady. It's been solid. Ultimately, though, quarterbacks are going to wear things like team win-loss record more than any other position in the NFL. So while they may not be a quarterback stat, ultimately, a quarterback is going to be the one whose legacy is defined by wins and losses. That being said, a couple of years ago, the Bills made a decision that some viewed as bold, some viewed as audacious, I thought was smart, which was they evaluated Tyrod Taylor and did not feel as though he could be a quarterback that could take them to the next level. He was a quarterback that could help lead them to a 9-7 playoff season, but they felt as though quarterback was a more pressing need going forward. Josh Allen obviously drafted 7th overall for that reason. I think with Andy Dalton, there are parts of me that believe that it would have to take very unique circumstances around him on the roster to be a player that kind of pushes you over the top. Solid, can be accurate, certainly can throw for a ton of yards. Experience, that much is for sure. He's been in the league since 2012 and started basically every game except for when he has been hurt. But Andy Dalton is a guy that I'm sure the Bills will show a lot of respect for just because of how much he has thrown it over the first 2 weeks. I believe he's on pace right now for 777 passing attempts, which is a gargantuan number for a 16-game season.
Yeah. And that also says a little bit something about the situations they found themselves in weeks 1 and 2. Seattle jumped out into a big league, and they climbed back into that. And, of course, being way down to the 49ers set them up for a lot of passing yards as well. Does that also play in to their run game deficiencies, or is their run game bad? Is it just lack of attempts?
I think it all kind of ties together. So a couple of context points here. The Bengals are down. They're starting left tackle, Jonah Williams, their first round draft pick this past year out of Alabama, very well-regarded offensive line prospect. In some people's eyes, the best offensive line prospect in the draft. can play guard, can play left tackle, probably will be a left tackle for them when everything settles. He's out for the year. They also are, you know, this is a team that had to deal with some injuries throughout the offseason to the offensive line. So they have been playing with some spare parts along the offensive line as it is. Andre Smith, a career right tackle, has taken snaps at left tackle for them. So certainly a lot of injuries have impacted the running game there. And then I think when teams, you know, want to dare a quarterback to beat them, then I think it's possible that you can sort of have a situation where the ground game is a byproduct of circumstances, even if it's not so much just a talent issue. I think Joe Mixon's a talented runner, that much is for sure, but they have not been getting anything going whatsoever so far this season.
With Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, let's get around the league a little bit, Field. And as you might imagine, folks in Buffalo fascinated by what's going on around them in the AFC East, including the Dolphins. Are the Dolphins creating a new prototype for how to rebuild? I mean, this looks like a full-on tank when you think about the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade and everything else that's gone on so far with them.
It's hard to say whether they're creating a trend or not for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's the very beginning of this process for them. As you noted, Minkah Fitzpatrick was traded. That came on the heels of a Laremy Tunsil trade. You know, they've acquired a bunch of extra first-round picks. And you get some of the motivation, right? But this goes back even further. They traded away Robert Quinn this past offseason. Kiko Alonso was traded to the Saints right at the end of the preseason. There have been a lot of moves Miami has made. They've cut veteran players. It is down to, you know, a lot of unfamiliar faces there in Miami. Here's the question, though. Is it a trend or not? Because if it doesn't work, and how do you quantify working? You know, because in the NFL, it's not often that a team is patient. Let's say a GM or a head coach see through to his vision. Because I think that if given time, Chris Greer, the general manager, and head coach Brian Flores have a chance to say, to show, like, our idea was to strip this down to the studs, acquire a bunch of valuable commodities and first round picks, and try to rebuild this thing. If they're given the time, then maybe we'll find out whether this can be a precedent going forward.
Is it bad to say, you hope, not just because it's the Dolphins, but for everybody, is it bad to say you hope it doesn't work? I hope this is not what you have to do.
Yeah, I think there are some people that don't believe in non-competitive football. And I'm
one of them. Right.
Yeah, and I don't – listen, they're working hard. Everybody is down there. But they've got 10 points in two games. They've got, I believe, a minus 79 or 92. I don't know, something ridiculous. Almost a 100-point differential through two games, 59 to 10 and 43
to 102
to
10,
You know, I'm not much of a math guy, but, you know, something like that. Yeah. 92 points, I believe it is, through two games. So, yeah, it's going to be, and there are other sports where we've seen it, and it's worked to great success. The Houston Astros, I think, are the best example of that. I think there are a lot of things that go into it, though, beyond just, you know, trading away good players for good pieces and hoping for the best. There's a lot more, and I know the Dolphins know that, so we'll see.
And is there anything to be said for it? It looks as though as well that you've got reports coming out of players not wanting to be a part of that plan. Kiko Alonso wanted out of there early. Minkah Fitzpatrick asked for a trade. After their week one shellacking, there were reports that a multitude of or multiple players wanted to be traded away from the Dolphins. So if it doesn't work, one reason it may not work is because players don't want to risk a year of their career to be a part of it and they ask to be traded.
Yeah, you know, and here's what I think people sometimes overlook, or maybe sometimes we try to just think of – people think of these players sometimes as commodities too frequently, which they're not. They're humans, and yes, they want to make a good livelihood for their family and their future, but these guys are competitors too, right? I mean, you only get so many shots in the NFL, and, you know, to have a season sort of go by the wayside, you know, and I know – not that anybody ever thought this, but, you know, their GM yesterday said – we knew this is, you know, we know this isn't a season we're going to win the Super Bowl. Well, like every team at the start of the year goes in with expectations to win the Super, or at least to win, be competitive, right? And I know that to verbalize that, I think, is something that's probably a little bit jarring for players to hear. I think guys want to be competitive. They want to go in every single Sunday and feel like they are going to win. Otherwise, why are you putting in the work?
Right.
Field, what'd you make of the Giants' decision, you know, to switch out Eli Manning for Daniel Jones? Manning hasn't been awful.
Well, you know, it was time. And, you know, I think the question probably is not so much about the decision to move Daniel Jones into the starting lineup, but maybe about how the process played out over the last offseason. So Eli Manning, $17 million in cash this year. It's a lot of money. might be even more than that, to be honest, that he's making. And the question might be, you know, if you're allocating resources, is that how you want to spend your money and your cash and your cap for a player that you are going to move off of after 2 weeks? And I understand that Pat Shurmur and GM Dave Gettleman were not planning to move off of Eli Manning after just 2 weeks, but they did. And Daniel Jones, here's what I would say. It was time in the sense that Daniel Jones is a talented player. And in the same way that Josh Allen has quieted a lot of the critics who wonder what the Bills were doing when they took him seventh overall last year, Daniel Jones has a chance to do the exact same thing. Because if he's a really good player, it doesn't matter whether the Giants were the only team or one of 32 teams that wanted to take him at pick six. No one will be talking about where he was drafted if he shows out like the Giants believe he can.
That's a good point.
Yeah, quarterbacks are really the story around the National Football League. I was going to ask you about Teddy Bridgewater. I want to switch gears and go back to the AFC. Ben Roethlisberger's elbow surgery that's happening, and then the fact they've got Mason Rudolph in the wings. Pittsburgh all of a sudden went from a team that was going to show everybody what they could do without Le'Veon Bell, without Antonio Brown. They were going to come together and kind of rally. That's not probably going to happen now.
Well, we'll see. They really feel confident, and I think that the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade yesterday was a bit of a reflection of that. So they trade away a 2020 first-round pick to acquire Minkah Fitzpatrick. There are other conditions in the trade as well, other picks involved, I should say. I get the sense that it's a pretty resolute group. I think Mike Tomlin's a pretty resolute coach. I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh has more confidence in their own ability to be competitive this year and be competitive with Mason Rudolph, and maybe the outside perception is right now.
I'm going to get into some fantasy football with you. Field Yates, our guest, host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show, host of the Fantasy Football, Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, and we've had folks tweet in some questions, Field, about their fantasy concerns. From Steph, she wants to know, should I start Josh Allen this week since they're home against Cincinnati? What do you think?
Well, it depends on who your other options are, Steph, but generally speaking, Josh Allen is a very strong play inside the top 10 for quarterbacks this week. Depends on who you're choosing between, but I think in many cases you'll be starting Josh Allen.
And we have another fantasy question from William. Given what's happened at the quarterback position in Pittsburgh, is it time to sell high on James Conner, the running back in Pittsburgh?
Well, the problem is I'm not sure you're going to be able to sell high from very much. He's hurt, and he hasn't been particularly productive so far for two games. If you can get a great deal for another starting running back that's top 10 caliber, go for it. Otherwise, I think I'd hang tight.
Here's one from Jay. Should I start Aaron Jones, Packers versus Broncos, or Sony Michel, Patriots versus Jets? What do you think?
You know, I think I would lean towards Sony Michel here. Two players, they don't have great involvement on, in the passing game, but Jones has more than Sony Michel, and you know, the line right now is 22.5, I think, for the Patriots over the Jets. It feels like the kind of game that maybe you could run the ball effectively like Sony Michel did last week when he found the end zone.
We've got another question from Jay. Should I start Austin Eckler versus the Texans, the Chargers running back versus the Houston Texans?
Of course. Yeah, sounds great. I mean, he's been awesome. You would have to have unbelievable options to not want to start Austin Eckler this week.
And one more from George. Should I have any concern about Baker Mayfield against the Rams?
Yes, because it's a very, very good defense now. They've been better at home than on the road, but that has been more of a reflection of the offense than I think the defense. So I'd be a little bit concerned about Baker Mayfield. He's outside my top 10 quarterbacks this week against the Rams. That although Aaron Donald has not yet sacked a quarterback this season, he's been very disruptive, and I expect that to change this weekend.
Hey, Field, why do I have to watch the Browns again this Sunday night? They weren't that good on Monday night, were they? Were they?
Get used to it. We'll see plenty of it.
Right.
Just get used to it.
I've had enough of the Browns already. One game. They weren't that good on Monday night, were they?
Long seat. They had some. Listen, here's the thing that I would say about the Browns. It's just they got to figure out the offensive line. Did not scare a lot of people on Monday. Baker Mayfield was under duress. Got to figure out the offensive line, and then we'll see whether the coverage issues that reared themselves in week one are going to be any better. Delanie Walker had a big day. Titans had some success in the middle of the field. Let's see if the Browns can turn that around this week. It's a very, very good test against the Rams.
A better Sunday night game. That's a big
game. All right, Field, that's good stuff, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, the host of ESPN's The Fantasy Show. And we'll do this every week, Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. Talk to Field about the Bills, the NFL, and get some of your fantasy questions in there. And he has good answers for them. And, he did that right now. Excellent.
Yeah.
I did. I've had enough of the Browns, right? I mean, what did they show us Monday night that makes you think, oh, I can't wait to watch this team again?
Nothing.
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 Nothing. I know it's early, right? It's only two games.
Right.
I keep saying that. It's only two games.
I chimed in. You're right. It is only two games. There's a lot of question marks going out. I think this is one of those – we're still at that point of the season, and I said this yesterday, we're still kind of projecting what we think teams are now as to what they were last year. And just like the Bills, so much has changed for this team. You got to think it's a lot of it's changed for other teams as well. And we're starting to see not just because they're different teams starting the season, but also now you got teams losing quarterbacks and getting guys hurt and guys in and out of the lineup like we always do during the regular season. You kind of forget about that when you're trying to project what's going to happen because there's so much unpredictability week to week.
Yep, it's a week-to-week league, somebody once said.
Somebody said that.
Hey, the Bills on the practice field. When practice ends today, at some point we're going to get Ed Oliver in here, Bills' first-round draft pick, the rookie defensive lineman. He'll be sitting down here with Steve and I. We're going to hear from Josh Allen, we think, after practice as well. Bills and Bengals Sunday, and the Bills Foundation, they have that 50-50 jackpot every game, and in celebration of the Bills' 60th anniversary season and the NFL's 100th season, the Bills Foundation is going to guarantee a 50-50 jackpot of $160,000 this year. You can get 3 tickets for $5, 10 tickets for $10, 100 tickets for $20. Buy them at the stadium from mobile sellers and any of the 10 kiosks located throughout the stadium. The winning ticket gets $80,000 or 50% of the net proceeds, whichever is higher. The remaining proceeds support the Buffalo Bills Foundation, supporting youth health and wellness initiatives in Western New York. Look for that, the 50-50 raffle, the auction coming up this Sunday at One Bills Drive at New Era Field. All right, going to get back to our discussion of the day. The best part of the Bills start so far, what do you think it is? Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, come on back. It is One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close. Got wide open phone line today, and we got time to talk today about the Bills. That's what we do. What do you think? What's the reason for the Bills' 2-0 start? What's the best thing that has occurred through the 2-0 start this year? Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll get to some tweets. We'll read some tweets on that topic in a moment or two. In the meantime, let's do lunch, Steve. What's for lunch?
It's
a segment that we haven't really kept up with lately, and I feel bad about that.
It's not my
favorite.
The season jumps on us, and we got so much stuff to talk about.
Real
we can't
content.
Get to lunch. We have to skip lunch every day. So
we got real content.
I hope the listeners out there will appreciate our sacrifice.
You're the lunch guy, so you get it going.
All right, here's the lunch menu. Here we go. Item number one on lunch. Your appetizer. Who's going to be the bigger game changer on Sunday? Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson? Chiefs, Baltimore. Which quarterback's the bigger game changer?
I have yet to see either team play, Chiefs or Baltimore, but I'm going to answer with my heart. Come on, man. Lamar Jackson, he's played a couple of good games. Patrick Mahomes is the man. This is a no-brainer. Mahomes is a game changer.
MVP,
I don't know. Lamar Jackson's been good. I had a guy, a friend of mine, where the Cardinals saw me the other day that Lamar Jackson is the real deal. I get that. He's a real quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is really good.
He's an MVP.
I'm
going to say the other way. I'm going to say Lamar Jackson because I think Patrick Mahomes has more weapons to use, and I think Lamar Jackson brings a dimension with his legs that Patrick Mahomes doesn't need to because he throws the ball so well. But Lamar Jackson, I think, will be the biggest game changer on Sunday because I don't think the Chiefs have an answer for him. I think Baltimore will have an answer for Patrick Mahomes, but I don't think Lamar Jackson, I don't think teams have quite the handle on him. I think he's going to have a bigger I think he's going to be a bigger factor than Mahomes in week one. Okay, that All was right. the appetizer. Here we go. Entree. Biggest week three loss, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, or Eli Manning?
Oh, boy, that's
think about that.
It's amazing that they're all three out.
I know.
You know?
Week three.
Week three. Brees.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. There's a couple reports coming out of, Sean Payton said it today before practice, quote, "We will approach this game with two quarterbacks, Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill." They use Taysom Hill as kind of a utility guy, and you saw him a couple of Monday nights ago, right, in that game against Houston. Mm-hmm. Lines up all over the place, takes snaps, runs with the ball. He can throw a little bit. So I don't know. That adds, I think, a little bit of intrigue into what the Saints might look like. But Drew Brees is.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The trigger man for that prolific offense has been for a decade or more. Roethlisberger's really good, but they're already kind of struggling without some of their big pieces offensively. Yeah. Manning, that's a bad team. He doesn't, you know, they still don't have Golden Tate. They still don't have any real weapons over there other than Saquon. But it's a tough question, but I'm going to say the biggest loss is Drew Brees to the Saints.
Yeah, I don't think it's tough at all. Drew Brees, that the Saints team goes from a Super Bowl contender to maybe not even a playoff team without Drew Brees. They are done. They stick a fork in the Saints. They are absolutely done. Pittsburgh, maybe they can fight back into
it. What if Brees is back in 6 weeks? Still done?
I might be too late. Oh, okay. Might be too late by that time. If they can get in, but they got to go. You know what? 3-3, at least while he's gone. They ain't gonna do it. 6 weeks is an eternity in the National Football League. It's a week-to-week league. I get it and all that stuff. The Pittsburgh Steelers still have some hope. Mason Rudolph's been in that offense for a while. And they think they've got a really good offensive line still. They think they can run the football still. We'll see. Pittsburgh's not dead in the water. They just traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick. And we talked to Field Yates just a minute ago. He thinks there's still hope. At least Pittsburgh still believes they can make something happen. And the Giants are a different animal. They're waiting for Eli to go down. They were waiting for an excuse to bench him, and the Bills gave it to him this last weekend. So, no, Drew Brees is the guy who leaves the biggest void for his team. Okay, next good thing on the lunch menu. Better chance of happening.
Wait a minute. You skipped one, which I liked.
Okay. Yeah, player trade requests. Yeah. This thing we've been talking about, all these guys asking to be traded for their team or making the trade happen. You blame the team or do you blame the player? This is a great question.
I got option three. I blame the culture. The culture of the NFL and professional sports in general, where because of the way it's played, because of the way the game is played, because of the way teams handle players, players feel like, well, I've got to look out for number one here. And you look, if you're Minkah Fitzpatrick and a number one pick or a first round pick of the Dolphins, and you see what's going on around you, yeah, I understand that. Well, I don't want to be part of this. Get me out of here. He asked. He was rewarded. Different, you know, circumstances with every one of them, obviously. But I blame the culture. I blame the way professional sports is now. And I didn't agree with everything Steve Young said the other day, but I do agree with this. It's a lot like the NBA. That's what happens in the NBA. Players dictate where they should go. Is that wrong? Not necessarily. But I think it kind of furthers the degradation of the sport to where people watching think, well, these guys are just in it for themselves. You know what? They are. And the owners, by the way, are in it for themselves too. So I blame both the team and the player, but mostly I blame the professional sports culture. How's that?
So you're asking the waitress to do a special order?
Yes, I'm off the menu.
Okay, you're off the menu. I'm blaming the team. If you're not trying to win, players smell it. And in a game like football, that means everything. It's a game that demands a lot from its players, and the players, in turn, have the right to expect that the team is trying to give them every opportunity to be successful. When they smell a lack of effort above them in the ranks, they cut and run, and they have every right to. They're risking physical harm. They're risking their injuries. They're wasting their careers playing for a team that doesn't want to win when these guys are competitors. And then expecting the team turning around and expecting them to give them their full effort on the field. I think you blame the team when these guys all ask to be traded. And you're right. I see your point completely about the culture of professional sports. But let's face it, those guys have a skill set and a commodity that is in high demand. They can say where they want to sell it if they want to.
Well, they can to a greater extent now.
Right.
40 years ago, they couldn't.
That's right. And
that's what people have a hard time adjusting to. And I get that. Right. I'm not anti-free agency.
Yeah, I get it. But, you know, welcome to planet Earth. Guys are in it to get what they can get out of it. That's why they do their jobs.
And the owners are raking in money.
I know. Why is that a shock? It shouldn't be. All right. Shall we do that? Which one do you want? Next to the bottom?
Either one. I'm ready for both.
All right.
You can do both.
All right. Better chance of happening. Patriots 16-0, Dolphins 0-16.
Ooh, the Patriots have been so good on defense too through 2 weeks. It's only 2 weeks, right? Dolphins have been so bad. Field Yates was right. It's 102 to 92. No, it's 102 to 10.
They've
been outscored 102 to 10
by 92 points they've got. outscored in two games.
It's hard to go 0-16, but it's really, really hard to go 16-0. And there's a team that's practicing about a couple hundred yards away from here that might have something to say about the Patriots. Well, actually, about both of them. Right. But especially about the Patriots winning every game. I got the Dolphins going 0-16 as a better chance, but not by a lot.
Yeah, everybody's trying to help you go 0-16.
Yeah.
Nobody wants you to go 16-0.
Right.
I think that's the difference. Nobody cares if you go 0-16. Everybody will throw themselves in front of a bus to keep you from going 16-0. So I would say it's more likely that the Dolphins will go 16-0. They've almost done it once already. They were 1-15 and won on an overtime. So.
And as I said to Armando Salgaro a couple of weeks ago on the show, if they do go 0-16, I would hope that the 2019 Dolphins for years in the future meet every year when the last team has won a game and celebrate. Pop open a bottle of champagne. Our 0-16 record is still intact. Let's celebrate. You think they'll do that, right? They do that for when somebody loses.
I know.
I hope they do that.
I hope
keep
they
that
do
tradition
too.
Going.
I hope they
get
do
together
too.
With the undefeated Dolphin team. You know, get that group
and
together
get that, and then get
and
the 0-16.
Put them together. Have
put
a party.
Them together. Have a party. There you go. We can have two parties. One when the last team wins, and one when the last team loses.
There you go.
Gotcha. All right. Last one. This is dessert for lunch. Which is going to be the bigger upset, or which would be the bigger upset? The Broncos beating the Green Bay Packers, or the Pittsburgh Steelers beating the San Francisco 49ers?
I'm going to go with the Steelers would be the bigger upset. They got to go out west. They're probably rocked. Maybe went into the season a little bit unsteady with the departure of some of their key playmakers. To go out west, the Niners are home, 4:25 kickoff on Sunday. That's a tough assignment for Pittsburgh. The Broncos, I think, have enough defensively so that they might be able to come up with something. Both of them would be upsets, but I think the Steelers would be the bigger upset there.
I would go along with that as well. I think the Steelers, after losing the franchise quarterback who's been there and won two Super Bowls, having him go down unexpectedly with a second-year player making his first start, no question. I think the Steelers would be a bigger upset over this year's 49ers. Not always of the 49ers, but this year's 49ers are pretty good, so I think that's the bigger upset too. That's lunch. Very nice. Very
it was
well
great.
Done. Yeah.
What's for
except
lunch?
For your special order on the culture thing.
Let's very take true. a call here on the Dolphins. Mike in Buffalo. Hello, Mike. Go ahead. You're on the air.
This is kind of future thinking, but what's going on in Miami now, it's not going to end the tank, the era of the tank, but it is going to, like, seriously put it on hold and make teams reconsider if they want to tank or not.
Why do you say that?
Because what's going on in Miami right now?
What specifically are you talking about going on, Mike? You talking about the players wanting to leave?
Yes, yeah. They'll lose every single piece.
Right. I agree with you.
I hope you're right.
I think you're right. I think in football, it's hard because, listen, and I'll tell you this, too. In football, it doesn't surprise me that when Minka Fitzpatrick, when Kiko Alonso, when all these guys say, hey, I don't want to be here, the clubs are very willing to say, do whatever they can to give them what they want, because in a football team is not like a basketball team. It is not the same thing. It is not like these other sports. In football, if a guy doesn't want to be there, nobody wants him there, and you're better off without him. Get what you can get for him and let him go. You've got to create an atmosphere where guys want to play, because it is a physically demanding and risky game. You got to pour a lot into it. It's complicated. Your job depends on 10 other guys at any given moment to do their job. It is every player in the locker room is so interwoven in their responsibilities and their expectations and their sacrifice for one another that you can't have one guy who doesn't want to be there, because it affects the mindset and therefore the production of every other guy on the team. It spreads like wildfire, and if a guy doesn't want to be there and says it publicly, the club does the right thing and get him what he wants. You got to get what you can get for him and cut him or release him or trade him. It's just different, and I think it will have a chilling effect on these teams who decide, you know what, it's time for us to just, you know, break this thing down and rebuild. I think teams are going to figure out ways to do it on the fly, rebuild on the fly with what they've got and go from there. I don't think you need to – you know, go out and if you want a high drip pick in the draft, trade for it. Trade up. Give them some assets and a player to go up and get the guy you want in the draft. Don't lose games thinking you're going to get a higher draft pick. It just won't work.
It could have happened here. I don't want to say it yet because I don't think the process here is not complete. But the process that McDermott and Bean talked about when they first got here, and yes, they made the playoffs the first year, and yes, they took a step back, which is 6 wins last year, but maybe this is the template for how to do it, maybe. I don't know. I'm not ready to make that argument yet because they want to see how this season turns out, right? And it's only 2 weeks.
I think here. I
think they're onto something here.
And they got blindsided midway through that. By last year, the big problem was the offensive line. They got blindsided. Remember, they lost two guys they didn't know they were going to lose, starters, and they couldn't replace them. They really could not replace them with anybody.
Yeah.
And that cost them big time last year, and it set them back big time. And they had to use assets and do things during the regular season that cost them. So they kind of got blindsided, but every team should expect maybe a little of that to happen to them.
Sure.
But the Bills, that's what did it for them last year and really set them back, I think, to the tune of a couple of wins.
One more call on the Dolphins, Wade in Cheektowaga. Hello, Wade. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. What everybody seems to be overlooking is the fact that those contracts are laden with incentives. If you're on a team that's tanking, you're losing a lot of money right there, and nobody's talking about that.
Well, there's all every contract's different, and I don't know what incentives you're talking about. I'm not familiar with Minka Fitzpatrick or Kiko Alonso's incentive or Antonio Brown's incentives. Most of these guys, there is some financial
there's a penalty to pay if you're losing.
Right. There's
financially.
A little bit. Some of these guys, no. I mean, they're going to get paid no matter what. But some of these guys do have some of that tied up in there. I don't know what exactly incentives you're talking about, but there are some – perhaps some financial implications for some of these players.
If you've got a clause that says, I make the Pro Bowl, I get X amount, and if you're on this year's Miami Dolphins team playing lousy, you're not going to make the Pro Bowl. You're not likely to make the Pro Bowl. That's how it would cost you, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, but that's not what you're – yeah, those are – yeah, right, I get it. I get it.
Quarterbacks might have a clause in there for wins, right? They might.
Maybe. Incentive clauses are very tricky, and they're not as prevalent as they once were.
Because of the cap.
Because of the cap. So teams don't put those in there very much. The contracts are what they are for the most part. The problem comes up with guaranteed money, signing bonuses, prorated contracts. Like, for instance, the Giants are on the hook for $11.5 million for Eli Manning because he was on the roster opening day. 13 days later, they wish they'd have cut him opening day. It's stupid. I mean, it's absolutely idiotic. If you're going to move on from him after the game, two games he just played with those guys around him, what are you doing?
What are you thinking? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're on the hook for 11.5 unless they cut him.
Hey, we're going to get Ed Oliver on after practice. Practice just wrapping up, so stick around. That might be any minute now. We want to hear also from you, what's the best part of the Bills starting 2-0 so far this season? What are the best things that have happened in that 2-0 start? Give us a call to discuss. Send in a tweet. We can read it on the tweet sheet. The phone lines are open, 803-0550, or outside Buffalo toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health. We're live in the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close. All right, practice is over. Welcome back, by the way, to Orchard Park. It is a gorgeous day. I'm going to check the temperature, Steve, because it is perfect September weather. Brownie nailed it when he joined us early on when he said it's classic September weather. 73 degrees and sunny right now in
Orchard Park. Low humidity.
Oh, perfect humidity. Now, you want to know about Sunday? Is it too early to look at Sunday?
What are we even doing here?
Afternoon showers, partly cloudy skies during the morning hours, giving way to occasional showers in the afternoon. High 76 on Sunday. Winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, 40% chance of rain. Weather people are funny. I don't trust most of them, but I heard a couple last night saying that don't worry about the showers. It'll be after the game is over. So those are the ones I'm going with.
Which means it's going to be at a different – I always – the closer it gets, the better they get. But the further out you go, the more you know it's going to be like 24 hours off. So now that we're about – we're about 4 days away, you know, 3-5 days away, I'm thinking they're probably going to be like 12 to 14 hours wrong. So it could still happen.
You've got a math formula for figuring out how wrong the forecasts are.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. We're talking about the Bills. Their 2-0 start. Ed Oliver's going to join us in a couple of minutes as he wraps up practice. What's the best part of the Bills starting 2-0? The best thing they've done that helped them get off to the 2-0 start. A couple of calls here. We got Vinny on the line from Buffalo. Hello, Vinny. Go ahead. You're on the air with us, Vinny.
Murph, Steve, first-time caller. Love the show. Hey, guys, I just want to talk about our quarterback, number 17, Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, number 17, yes.
I love him. I'm most impressed with his poise. The two road victories were incredible. You know, an NFL team is an NFL team, and then being on the road, I mean, just great to see that. Love his size. But I got a question for you guys. If not already, do you think Josh Allen is possibly one of the better or could be the best throwing cue on the run? Because those are some impressive throws. Very difficult on the run. What do you
I've heard a lot of fans think Josh throws it better when he's running. I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah,
they look at that throw that he made to Dawson Knox on the run, and everybody's been talking about it. It was really an impressive throw. And they're thinking, see, there it is. There's the proof. Let's see him do it a lot. I don't want to see him run too much, or particularly when it's not planned. But certainly that throw was right on the money, and it was a dynamite throw. And you could see, too, and I was laughing to Murph. I go, look at the Giants' sideline when he makes that throw. Those guys, you could just see them all exhale, like, oh, my gosh. They just saw that throw, and they go, Eli's not going to make that throw, you know? Yep. And to see it in a situation like that, you could just see the body language of the Giants' sideline kind of like go, oh, my gosh, did you just see that?
He threw a dime.
Yeah, he threw a dart, and the Giants saw it.
Thanks, Vinny. Hey, on the Twitter poll, the best part of the Bills' 2-0 start, the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Nicky Boy tweets this in: the best thing they've done is move the ball consistently on offense. We have not had to rely on big plays or turnovers to get points because we've been able to sustain long drives and regularly convert third downs. Even in the Jets game, the offense was efficient, just unlucky. That's true. Jet tweets this in: using the passing game and moving the ball through the air, that's the best thing they've done. The staff has let Josh be a quarterback and use a more advanced passing attack than in years past. And for the most part, the O-line has allowed Allen time to make his reads and find open receivers. Hopefully they can keep it up. It's a different offense, Steve, because of the additions they've made, the receivers and the offensive linemen. I believe that.
Yeah, it's
not like they
different.
Were keeping the reins in on Josh Allen last year because he was a rookie or anything.
There were no horses.
Exactly.
He was holding the reins with no horses.
Yeah.
All right,
a break. Ed Oliver's going to join us when we come back. Come on back for that. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.